This is HamRadioCast.com, the radio show about amateur radio.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Bob Taylor. And we do welcome you aboard. It's Ham Radio Cast. And we're up to Ham Radio Cast number 32. And it's great to be back behind the microphone again after quite a hiatus. And great to chat with you again on HamRadioCast.com. And, gee, you know, I'm almost at a loss as to where we pick up. It's been quite a while in internet time. And all kinds of things, interesting things happening around the shack. And hope your shack is in good shape. Everything's going well in your corner of the world, wherever you may be listening to us. We have some great shows coming your way. But first, I do want to give a big thank you to Dave, KZ10, for taking care of HRC, keeping the virtual cast going, and doing a great job of it. Dave really comes up with some very interesting interviews, and you know, we always like to hear what he comes up with. So even though I wasn't behind the mic, I always tried to catch his shows and hope that you were able to enjoy them as well. Dave, of course, over at 99 Hobbies. We plan on doing some type of, which really has not even been completely decided yet, but certainly there will be some type of an association, certainly a banner swap, link swap between 99 Hobbies and HRC. I think that they both have interesting things to offer, and of course, you know, it's... I never really wanted to be exclusive because there's so much out there. You know, why listen to one frequency when you can listen to many? And the same thing goes for podcast. So we'll certainly get to work on the reciprocal link back to 99 Hobbies. And a big thank you to Dave for taking the helm in my absence. And so as we get back into it, and boy, the shack, a couple thing, major things that have happened. First of all, I have the beautiful JRC, the NRD 535 receiver for shortwave, is back at the main listening post. And I've been doing a lot of HF listening, mainly on 20 meters, a little bit on 17, bring in 75 and 80 at night. And it's been, you know, very enjoyable listening. And I guess I've come to the conclusion that really I do a lot more listening than I do talking. Just recently plugged in the through the external speaker jack on the NRD 535, and hooked up PSK, started copying some PSK signals. And what I love about PSK 31, actually a couple things. First of all, is that it's very conversational in that respect, very close to CW. There always seems to be some sort of a connection and camaraderie between people chatting on PSK. And so, you know, instead of just the signal report and location and off to the next contact, you get to know a little bit about the person, you know, what type of radio they're running, what kind of antenna they're running, where they're located, a little bit about their locale. And I find that very, very interesting. And that, for me, that's a key part of amateur radio is, you know, making new friends and hearing about, you know, distant places. So anyway, PSK 31 is great in that respect, in that you not only get that, but you get to see that scrolling across your screen, possibly as you're doing other things. I've been keeping busy, actually very busy, throughout the morning through evening hours. And if I don't have time to actually have the receiver on in the background, it's nice to see these conversations just scrolling across your screen. So if you haven't already, you may want to check out PSK 31. And of course, you know, the other thing is, you know, 31 hertz wide, that small of a passband, just amazing. The amount of, or really the lack of power needed to get your signal across. So you can literally use 40, 50 watts and be a big signal, a big presence on PSK. Whereas, you know, being in the location I am, I would certainly hate to fire up a kilowatt amplifier and, let everybody else in the proximity know that I'm doing so. I could just imagine, you know, lights flickering and, you know, phones coming unglued and electric blankets and all that. You know, it's just, yeah, we're just in too close proximity to use an amplifier. But PSK31 allows you to really be literally a big signal on the band with a very small amount of wattage. And I also built one of the kits from, and the name escapes me now, but by next show I promise to have it on there and have a link to it. But built one of the 20 meter PSK31 kits that was a transceiver with 1 watt output and very stable. And it was pretty much set right around 14070 through 072. And got a great amount of enjoyment out of that. And of course, with 1 watt output, it was a real challenge, no doubt about it. It was not easy to make contacts. But at the same time, it was very rewarding when you did and you were able to hold a QSO with 1 watt output. But, you know, that's some of the amazing, and also to be able to just, you know, not even hear a signal audibly on the band and be able to, you know, decode it through the built-in DSP and the software. So anyway, if you haven't checked it out, you may want to go. A good source of information, of course, is psk31.com and a good place to get started. But many, many links out there if you do some Googling. I also wanted to mention briefly the beautiful Kenwood TS-2000 Limited Edition. If you haven't seen this yet or seen a photo of it, what a beautiful looking radio this is. It's in QST and I believe it was in CQ as well. But if you get a chance to take a look, it's the same TS-2000 that we all know and love, but at the same time, it's a limited edition. Only 300 of them will hit the U.S. market, and it's in a beautiful black finish. And I almost wish all of the TS-2000s were like this, but it really looks nice, and I can't wait to get the LE in the shack here. It is on order, and we do expect it in shortly, so we'll be able to shoot some photos of it and tell you all about it. It is supposedly as well hand-tuned, which is interesting. It comes with all of the options built in, the DRU digital recording unit, as well as the voice activation unit, and I forget the model number of that offhand. And unfortunately, forgetting more and more things as time goes on, but that happens. But anyway, a voice unit is very useful out in the vehicle. I use that with the Kenwood TMD-700A that I use in the when I'm out mobile, and that really comes in handy because I can just tap a button on the mic or tap a button on the radio, hit the volume control, and immediately it reads back the frequency that I'm on. So it really is great that I don't even have to take my eyes off of what I'm doing, and it reads back to me where I'm at. So I don't know how useful that will be in the house, but certainly for anybody that has any type of you know, visual acuity problems or things like that, that would come in handy. And it's a very pleasant female sounding voice, and let you know exactly where you are on the band, and your power level and things like that. So really looking forward to getting the TS-2000 limited edition. It should be on the way, coming from Atlanta, and we'll give you more on that as it happens and as Brown makes the delivery, hopefully very soon. So without that, let's see, I think I could probably keep going on for a long time here, but I won't do that because we have waiting in the wings here a great interview, as always, very interesting to talk to Bob Grove, who is the publisher, of course, of Monitoring Times, almost needs no introduction, as well as he runs the web presence Grove Enterprises, where you can get anything from books on shortwave listening, amateur radio, right on up through high-end receivers and transceivers mixed in there. Just about anything communications comes to mind with Bob Grove. So we'll jump right into it, and we've got the go button.
And now from the Pod Squad Telos One Line, Studio 1A welcomes our special guest.
And what better way to bring back Ham Radio Cast than to have an interview? And I know our last one was very, very popular. And so I wanted to bring back again the very popular Bob Grove from Grove Enterprises. He's the, of course, the CEO and publisher of Monitoring Times, as well as the, did I get it right, Bob? Are you president or CEO of Grove Enterprises?
Yeah, right. Basically, whatever title I'd like to make up since I started the company.
Yeah, when you get at the top, yeah, you can really make up those titles, can't you?
Right. I guess king. How's king?
King, yes. Well, he is king of the domain of Grove Enterprises.
There you go.
And he's responsible, of course, for the founder of Monitoring Times. So, you know, that's a magazine that is probably close to a lot of our hearts. I go to the bookstore all the time, and that's actually one of the reasons, Bob, I don't subscribe, is I kind of look forward every month. I go to, Borders and, we'll go
right.
ahead and...
A lot of our regular readers get Monitoring Times the same way, Mark.
Yeah, no doubt, I buy it. I buy that and that CQ and,
sure.
a couple others, but, it's just kind of fun to go there, and it's a whole thing that I do with my... The ham friends, but we want to welcome you back. It's great. We appreciate the time you spend here. And this morning we wanted to talk a little bit about what's happening in the, I don't really want to call it the government sector, because I guess it's an offshoot of that. But we were talking before the show a lot about, Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the, all of these little, almost quasi-government civilian agencies that have been spawned off of that, and all the money that's being, filtered down to that, is really spawning a lot of interest in radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what we find out, we get contacted by a number of key purchasing agents. These little agencies, as you say, are spawned from the major government agencies and the military, and they kind of insulate the actual military organization itself from direct contact with the vendors. But in any case, we find that the stuff they're buying right now, for the most part, seems to be more in the nature of radio surveillance equipment. Yeah, they're interested in, and most of the spectrum they use is in the VHF-UHF area. A lot of it goes, of course, to Iraq, and a lot of it goes to Afghanistan.
Mm.
And they'll take, whereas they could, for example, contact a major company like Rohde & Schwarz of Germany, or some of the very, very large, like the offshoots of Watkins Johnson and so on,
right.
Hughes and so on over here. Ordinarily, systems like that are extraordinarily expensive. So if the particular agency is on an experimental budget, a limited budget, a little bit of an, let's say, in an overpayment situation where they have some funds left over, then they can get stuff that basically they could throw away if they needed to, and they don't have to account for it. And so they'll go to the smaller vendors, such as Grove Enterprises and many of the others that get this type of equipment. The stuff they buy typically would be the ICOMs, the WIN radio. They rarely would buy a Uniden scanner. They will, however, purchase some of the higher end, like AOR,
mm-hmm.
that have wide frequency coverage, have particularly good specifications, and are a little better than just the conventional over-the-counter scanners.
In fact, I think the AORs are almost mostly used by government and military. Is that
yes,
true?
Right. Yeah. They have an entire series now of high-end receivers, the AR-1. There are a number of them that we have on our website from AOR that are primarily surveillance instruments, radio surveillance instruments. And of course, the problem is where consumers would, if they had the money, would like to buy these, because they cover cellular frequencies, they're not eligible for purchase because they are scanning receivers. Back in, what has it been now? Since 1994, it's been unlawful for any receiver that has scanning in the 30 megahertz and above to have cellular coverage in the United States, unless the instrument is purchased specifically by a government agency or a cellular service provider or a legitimate a test equipment application, such as someone who is in the repair business for two-way radio and the cellular services.
Right.
So, yeah. And so many of these high-end receivers at this point have only the target of federal government agencies or local, even local agencies that are considered government because they are tax supported, or of course military applications.
Right, and now so you're seeing a lot of the radios that are the very broadband, the DC to light type of radios.
Yes, we do. Wynn Radio, for example, they start out with a WR3150 receiver, which goes up from about just a few kilohertz, typically 150 kilohertz with guaranteed spec, up to about 1.5 gigahertz. Then they have a 3500 that goes up, I believe it's to 2.5 gigs, and then they have a 3700, which goes up even higher, around 4.5 gigahertz.
Wow.
Yeah.
And of course, I guess when you get up in there, everything is digital. There's really very little, if any, analog.
That's correct. Yeah, you're unlikely to find really any analog voice above roughly 1.5 gigs, somewhere around there. Once you get up in the true microwave gigahertz region, it is all digitized.
And yeah, I guess it's fair to mention that a lot of these frequencies, now, especially even with cell phones, you know, it used to be that, of course, you know, not that we would have ever done it, but, you know, 15 years ago, well, no, what is it, 20 years now, you could go back and, you know, in the 800 range, you know, everything was right in the open and analog. So
yes.
You just, you know, you weren't supposed to listen to it, but it was still all out there in narrowband FM.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, now everything is very tightly encoded and, you know, even if the receivers could go there, you know, very few, but, you know, those people with some very expensive gear would be able to listen to it anyway.
That's right. The cellular frequency ranges are now almost exclusively the domain of digital communications. I can bring up here, I'm in my little communications, my ham shack or communications lab right now, and as I punch in on a spectrum analyzer, the 869 to 894 megahertz range, just to do a spin through, there's virtually nothing I see in analog carriers, and suddenly all I see popping up the big bands of there it is. Can you see it, Mark?
Yeah, I'm trying to visualize it, but actually I can, though.
Yeah, that's right. Suddenly what I see is a huge rise in the, what looks like background noise. It's a big mm-hmm. block, and what I'm actually seeing there would be the all the digitals all slammed, doing their frequency sharing and so on in what we call CDMA mode here. And so to find an analog signal, occasionally you'll spot an analog signal, but usually what it is, rather than hearing a voice on it, all you would hear would be just the tones of handover.
Oh.
Bookkeeping, basically, of the control signal.
I see.
Yeah,
because
that's basically the only analog you'd hear on there.
I see. So probably as the sites hand off information, they can all talk the same language and analog.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. So, I think, you know, now comes to the interesting part. We know there's a lot of great radios out there. I've also got the new little ICOM R1500. Which which I'm enjoying.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very interesting radio, as well as just, I think almost anything out there you get, even the little HTs for amateur use, you know,
right.
A lot of those cover all the way on up through 1.3 gigs. So kind of interesting, and they will do narrow wideband FM, so we're seeing more and more radios with that capability.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. It's incredible what they're building into teeny little boxes now.
I know that they fit just, you know, literally just right in the palm of your hand, but
yeah.
Now, once somebody gets something like that, and they're interested in maybe, you know, just doing a little bit of experimentation, what are some of the bands that you'd like to maybe put the search ranges in?
Yeah, for conventional analog, most people obviously are going to be interested in listening to voice, and especially if you've got a handheld, that's all you're going to be able to enjoy the demodulation of. But the bands that seem to be of greatest interest, now, naturally, the ham bands for hams, but let's talk about getting outside of the amateur radio services now to those services that are the most fascinating. If you're into public safety, the fire, police, EMS, that type of thing, of non-federal government, law enforcement, and so on, the old 30 to 50 megahertz FM low band is virtually abandoned now. There's a very, very little activity still remaining in that area. So although occasionally you'll hear a statewide service and so on down there, most of it is going to be in high band, which is essentially 151 to about 160. That's the area where you'd be looking for police and fire and that type of thing. Then UHF, which is in the 450 to 470 range, and more specifically in the 453 and 460 range, up in about a megahertz up from each of those starter frequencies. A great deal of it is now switching over to trunking in the 800 megahertz range. And trunking is a very interesting technology. It makes use of the fact that you can have fewer frequencies assigned to a large administration and simply pool them together. And each time a user of one department within that agency pushes the mic button, he's likely to be switching over to an unused channel at that moment. And so they are able to constantly bounce back and forth, and this is called trunking. The old conventional scanners in which you simply enter memory channels that are assigned to that agency are not as likely to be able to track all of it without losing a few of the transmissions. So new scanners now contain trunk tracking. These are systems like LTR, Motorola, and so on. These are a couple of the largest systems that you're likely to find on there, and they are able to actually track the trunking. The next step above that, though, that's assuming that the speech will still be analog.
Right.
Motorola brought in several years ago DVP and DES. These were methods of scrambling and encoding and encrypting voice and data. This became very popular and found its way into the trunking systems so that even if you could track the trunking handoffs from channel to channel, you'd still hear nothing but what sounded like a rise in the background hiss. However, this is now changing. There's been, at the federal level, propensity to use some types of systems that are more compatible among users so that one agency needing in an emergency to contact another will have full compatibility. And they have standardized on a system that was put out many years ago by the Association of Police Communications Officers, or APCO. It's called Project 25. This is actually a digitized speech, and on a conventional scanner, you wouldn't get it. However, the algorithm for that digitization is open. It's an open architecture, and anyone is allowed to listen to it. So even though it's digitized, it is now legal for people to monitor the digitization of P25. This is a new avenue now opening up for scanner listeners that were afraid everything was going to go digitized and they'd never be able to understand it again. As long as they have APCO P25 compatible scanners, more and more users will be available for their monitoring.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting point, Bob, that even though it is digital, that there's a big difference between digital and scrambled.
Right.
And that, you know, I've got two scanners here, the excellent little Uniden think it's the 396T handheld.
Yeah, isn't that a nice scanner?
It's amazing.
Oh, it's a very popular one.
Fits in the palm of your hand, 6,000 channels.
Yep.
APCO, and but of course, once they go scrambled, then that's a whole different ball game.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Scrambling is a privacy technique which enables only the users within a system to monitor the communications, whereas digitization is merely a technology that is more efficient for the transmission of voice and data.
Yeah, and it actually sounds very weird. I think since last time we talked, I probably picked up both of those, but I've got two APCO 25 capable scanners now.
Uh-huh.
It's very interesting to see that little P25, you know, digit come on, because all of a sudden it just takes a whole new, I think it's got more dynamic range, it's completely quiet, and
mm-hmm.
You hear this strange sounding voice, but it's very interesting to listen to.
Yes, it is, and as you point out, Uniden's was a BCD396T. I think is a full nomenclature for that little handheld. That probably is the finest handheld scanner ever produced up to this point.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's got this nice blue background. Everything is done by menus with this beautiful looking matrix font. And
right.
It's because they did this from the ground up. You know, they didn't add APCO 25 onto it. They just built this right from the ground up as a fully capable scanner.
That's right.
Now, we're seeing with some police services here in Central Florida that most of the big ones here in Orange County are APCO 25. One of the small ones just recently went digital.
Uh-huh.
They went scrambled.
Oh, so they actually are encrypted.
Yeah, so they're actually fully encrypted, and I think that would make a very interesting interview, is to actually maybe talk to somebody from the department and, you know, see if, you know, in other words, in keeping touch with the public, you know, I always thought it would maybe a good idea if a department is encrypted for some reason, that maybe they have a community service officer, you know, some liaison, you know, something where they do keep their communications out in the open. You know, maybe some of the more routine things that go on day to day.
That's right. There's a very delicate balance there, because there's no question that many agencies have reported traditionally, just classically, that people listening to scanners for the main have been of great use. For example, in a search or a hijacking of a vehicle or possibly an abduction, many of the clues are called in by observers out there who are scanner enthusiasts monitoring the police communications. So the question comes up, there certainly are things as well that the police would like to discuss on the air that they didn't just want public dissemination of that information, and so that they would like to keep confidential and private. Where is that balance?
Yeah, that's a very, and that could take up quite a few shows is to discuss that, because you're right. The agencies, of course, are funded by our tax dollars,
right?
As a public, but at the same time, of course, you know, there is certain information that we don't want the bad guys to know.
That's right.
But then you come back around and say, well, how many of the bad guys really do have, you know, APCO 25 capable scanners and
very rare.
Exactly. Have programmed all the trunk groups in properly and mm-hmm. and all that. You know, it's something that really more of a true hobbyist would do.
Yeah, it is, because if the police agency were upon capture or actually upon even the elusiveness of a suspect were to discover that he was able to get away because of the use of a scanner, that would become very immediately publicized. I mean, they'd want to say, see what happens, and that almost never happens.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think we've heard of that maybe once or twice in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
That's right. In my lifetime, I've only heard of it 2 or 3 times.
And like you say, it's a balancing act. And
right.
But, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, just what happens. I think that at some point, and it also comes back to some of the news organizations, you know, like does the newspaper, local radio, local TV stations, you know, do they or should they be given a radio so that they can monitor? And, you know, things like that should serve
some
people.
Right. Some are actually court authorized to do that. The agencies provide written permission among the larger news agencies. And what the agency will do in that case, or not the agency, rather, but the news medium will do, if they hear something going on of a search or something that apparently is confidential, they'll immediately call the officer in charge in order to get permission to utilize that on air.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I know earlier on you mentioned that the 30 to 50 megahertz range. And living here in the, I think most of the people that may hug the southern border would be very interested in that range, because as we get into this sunspot cycle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That,
I know where you're going with that one. That, if you can speak Spanish, especially.
That's right. You know, yeah. Because all of those radios, you know, are drifting down towards South America.
Yes.
And they're still used in cabs and, you know, all kinds of things.
Oh, absolutely they are. One of the most interesting things we come across, too, by the way, with regard this, we could almost call it incidental listening, is that the military satellites up in the 260 megahertz range are occasionally keyed up by ground communication services from all over the world.
Wow.
Yeah, you'll be listening, and suddenly up will come one of these MILSATs and think, oh, good, we're going to hear some tactical communication. It'll be somebody dialing a telephone calling his wife for bread.
Yeah, there's so much up in space as well. And,
yeah.
You know, we've got here in, more towards the south? I'm in the central part of Florida, but Homestead Air Force Base and things like that.
Right.
And a lot of these military communications are still, you know, right in the clear and in the military aviation band.
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
And what frequencies do those cover, Bob? I don't know those offhand.
Yeah, the military aircraft band, which is essentially the equivalent of our 118 to 137 megahertz civilian band, is actually 225 to 400 megahertz, and it's also AM.
Okay, so very easy to monitor.
Very easy to monitor, yes, provided you have one of these new wideband scanners that allows 225 to 400 to get direct entered into that or searched.
Right, and then, of course, there's also the new 700 megahertz band, and it just goes on and on, but I think we're living in a time right now where there's more, you know, radio activity is really coming back.
Yes, it is. No question about it. A lot of the naysayers were saying, you know, with satellites and with the computer and internet and so on, we'd see the demise of radio. There's no question there's been a great deal of change and shift, but certainly not the demise.
No, it's, yeah, exactly. It's just changing, and probably will constantly be changing, especially as computers, or really as more of these radios turn into computers.
That's right.
With a
yes.
display, you know, we're going to see more change. But yeah, I think the hobby and, you know, the interest and radio activity is it really just coming to a major peak. And the sunspot cycle, is it number 23, I think, that's coming up?
I think that's right. I believe that's right.
That's really going to spur a lot of interest as we, you know, get anywhere from, you know, where would it start? Maybe at where 10 meters left off, you know, it just keeps going, and the bands mm-hmm. become incredibly active. So we're all looking forward to that to spike.
Absolutely, we are.
And that happens once every 11 years.
11 years, right. Yeah, that's the peak. Of course, obviously, it's not a narrow window. It builds up, and then it gradually fades out. And there have been, even here, we're in the sunspot minimum right now, like six or 7 years since the last peak. But regardless, we have openings in the bands. 10 meters, 6 meters opened about a week ago, and just worldwide communications.
Yeah, and we even had, you know, in the morning time, this is a whole different thing, but, you know, right around the VHF spectrum in 2 meters, you know, we have the morning openings, you know, where you may get a couple hundred mile hops.
Right.
And that's a little bit different type of propagation, but that's almost always around, you know, as we hit the gray line.
Sunrise
and sunset.
Yep. Yeah, so. It certainly is. One of the interesting things, too, we might want to talk about later on is direction finding. This is a fascinating sport and could be intriguing. Right now, for example, I've had some hams contact me about a spy numbers station that's popped up in one of the ham bands.
Oh.
And so I've built a direction finding antenna to take bearings, and several of the others are, too, to see whether, as some suspect, it's actually domestically located here in one of the eastern states, and so we're trying to find out exactly where and who.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And yeah, people go on these the fox hunts. And
yes, they do. Right.
and geocaching, and it just goes on and on. But anyway,
yep.
Looking at the clock here, Bob, I see I've kept you for about a half an hour. So.
And I've enjoyed it.
It's been fun.
It has. We'll do it again.
Definitely. We'd love to have you back on. Always enjoy chatting with you, Bob.
And you, Mark, and being with our listeners.
Definitely. And so we invite you to stop by the official Grove Enterprise store. It's on the web at Grove, that's GROVE-ENT.com, and check out what they have to offer. And, you know, it's hard to miss on the on any of your bookshelves. Monitoring Times, a great magazine that I love to have a cup of coffee over and see what's happening in the monitoring world. So, Bob Grove, king of Grove Enterprises, we thank you for your time. And
it's been my pleasure. It always is.
Have a great day, Bob.
You too, Mark.
Studio 1A Productions.com.